Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Dick Richards' 1986 film, Heat. Joining me today is my co-host, Tyler. How's it going?
What's up, Ben? Hey, let me tell you something.
Yes?
If Disney had spent the money they used on John Carter on actually sending somebody named John Carter to Mars, I think it would have been a little more successful.
Wow, I had never thought about that. That's an interesting...
I think it's barely enough just to do that. I mean...
Interesting tactic.
The amount of time they spent advertising, like 6 or 8 months, definitely could have sent somebody to Mars.
Yeah, in that time frame, definitely. And yeah. Maybe, I mean, I am woefully ignorant when it comes to the...
Space travel?
Yeah, current state of American space travel. But from what I understand... Disney lost about $200 million on John Carter, and that's just their losses. So maybe they spent closer to three or maybe even rumored four. So for $400 million, let's just call it that. Is that possible to send somebody to space on that? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that's enough. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I like it.
I mean, I'm no economist, but sure.
Right. Well, we may or may not have a guest join us a little bit later on, but I'm not going to introduce this person just
It's Burt Reynolds.
It's not Burt Reynolds. just in case they end up not showing up. So let's just go ahead and start the show. So if you guys are joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail, please do, at 904-469-6566, or email us, do that too, at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this in every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character name game, and this is going to be a fun one. The character name for this week is Mr. Rad, R-A-D, Mr. Rad. So at the end of the show, Tyler, and potentially the guest, if they end up showing up, not Burt Reynolds, we'll be guessing what movie that character is from, keeping in mind there has to be some sort of loose connection to a film that came out in theaters this past weekend, or I guess, yeah, this past weekend, that works. We're recording on Saturday today, a day early. We've been doing a lot of midweek podcasts recently.
So, yeah. We skip around. It's fun.
Yeah, we're
keep things exciting.
Evening the what is that? A seesaw.
Evening the keel.
Yeah, you know, like kids get on the seesaw. Like, we're 1 week. We're recording on Tuesday. Oh, we're back to Saturday. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. All right, so let's go ahead and transition into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to recently, or concerts, books, comics, all that kind of stuff. Tyler, why don't we start with you, as always? What have you been consuming this past week?
Well, I think we mentioned this maybe 12 months ago. I think Joe was talking about this show called Game of Thrones. Have you heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this?
I have not seen it. I have heard of
Just finished up season one. Apparently, they wait an entire year after the show's finished to release it on DVD.
Yes.
And since I don't have HBO and since I don't feel like paying for HBO, I can't watch it illegally, unfortunately, because I'm not a pirate.
Yep.
I had to wait until the DVDs came out, and then the DVDs came out, and I got it at a pretty good price, but it was, again, it was only 10 episodes, but they're 60 minutes each, so it's probably more like 12 or 13, maybe 12 regular TV episodes, I guess, like if you consider 40-minute dramas or whatever.
Sure.
Really awesome. I don't want to talk about it too much. Like, check it out. Although you may want to... I don't know. Like, I'm already geared up for season two, but there's no way that I can watch it because I don't have HBO. So that's like the tragedy of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go read the books, but it's like, really, who reads?
Yeah.
I'm far beyond illiterate at this point.
I find this interesting coming from someone who has an up your bookend segment on this very podcast.
Yeah, it's all a charade, Ben.
Okay.
Not to be confused with the. Audrey Hepburn, Gary Grant movie we watched a couple episodes ago. So yeah, I mean, check that out. I think, I don't know, go get the DVDs and watch it and then come back and report. Also, another show. Oh, Sean Bean's awesome in it, by the way.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple questions about Game of Thrones. Does it, because, you know, as you said, we've been talking about the show for a long time. I think when DC Pearson came on and was talking about Pulp Fiction, he mentioned it. And that was a while back. Like, that was episode 60-something, maybe. And we're at, like, 86 now. So,
yeah.
Do you think that Game of Thrones lives up to the hype?
Let's see. I mean, I was pretty stoked about it. And it was... I mean, there's a lot of intrigue. There's a lot of, like... It's very similar to Tolkien, where it's... there's a lot of legend stuff that you don't know about. Like, there's a lot of history that they don't just come out and scream at you because they have, I guess they knew that the show was going to be on for a long time, that it was going to be fairly popular. So they're like, okay, well, we don't have to tell you everything that's gone on right away. Like, they hint at different histories and stuff and, like, the kings that have come before. But it's also not so much Tolkien, but also kind of like a Knight's Tale-esque, because there's, I mean, just because there was jousting in it, but like that kind of like middle age Arthurian feel to it.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's got a little bit of like just it takes all the best of fantasy epics and stuff or, you know, like sword and sorcery stuff and kind of like there's a lot of Conan the Barbarian in it, too, which is really cool. So
is there actual like magic and sorcery in it or is it just OK? All right.
Yeah, there's I mean, it's not in your face, but it's there.
OK.
So there are certain laws and rules that like, you know, a lot of the people in the world don't know about. Like it's very mystical and very secret and very scary.
OK.
Which I think is kind of cool. Where it's not like Harry Potter. It's like magic is everywhere. Yeah. Yay! It's a little more serious than that. So yeah, definitely check it out. I mean, Sean Bean's in it. Lena Headey from the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yes.
Hot as usual.
Okay.
There's a lot of breasts. And Peter Dinklage. He's pretty awesome in it too.
Cool. Yeah, so, I mean this is definitely one of those things that like everybody's been talking about for a long time. I'm absolutely gonna catch up on it. So
yeah, bullet and buy the DVDs, man. That's all I can say.
Okay. All right, we'll do.
It's better than The Shield, I think.
All right. What else have you been checking out?
Another internet series I checked out from Lowbrow Studios. Lowbrowstudios.com, I think, is their website. They're two guys named Mike and Mike. I think we should have not Mike and Mike in the morning, like on ESPN, but two guys named Mike and Mike that make animated shorts for the internet, comedy shorts, usually based on like video games. I think we should have them on. They're pretty funny. But they have this show on YouTube called Sonic for Hire, and it's about basically Sonic the Hedgehog, who's been out of work for like the last 20 years. And like everyone, like he's continuously trying to find work, and he'll do anything to make some money. And like he lives with Tails, who's like... who thinks he's like a fucking bum and doesn't pay his rent or anything. And of course he runs into like different video game icons and things like that. And it's raunchy, but it's also pretty funny.
Okay.
And there's like 40 episodes, but they're like 2 minutes each. So, you know, you might have a little time, a little entertainment while you're at work. I don't know.
Those guys have been busy, sounds like.
Yeah, it's been on, I guess, for like a couple years now.
Okay.
They do it weekly. They do it by seasons.
That sounds pretty funny. I like the concept of taking, you know, like well-established characters and like putting some sort of spin on it.
Yeah, me too.
I
think I might have not invented it, but I've dabbled in that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Not as fun when you don't actually know how to animate anything.
Yeah, that.
But I get by. I get by.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Screeching Halt. No, I'm done.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was hoping you would have a lot more because I have, like, almost nothing this week. I've been...
Okay, that's good because I really need to tear into heat, so...
Okay, all right. I have not really had much of a chance to watch anything. I've been insanely busy, but I did, as you alluded to earlier with The Shield, I did finally finish watching The Shield, so...
Vic Mackey's a cop.
Yes, Vic.
And that guy from Justified's in it.
Yes, Walton Goggins. I just want to give a shout out to Walton Goggins, Michael Chiklis, Jake Carnes, who plays Dutch, CCH Pounder, who plays Claudette. I mean, such awesome characters. And the show, like, it definitely went through some ups and downs. I mean, it's 7 seasons long. For people who are just joining and don't really know anything about the show, it was on FX for 7 years. And, you know, any show that hits 7 seasons is going to have peaks and valleys, I think. But
was it in season 5 where the girl was, like, banging herself with a soda bottle or something? Like, things got pretty raunchy in season 5, I recall.
I don't remember that particular incident.
Yeah, you do.
No, seriously, because Pat and I, a former NJNM podcast co-host, Pat and I, started watching the show in May of 2011, and it is now April of 2012. It literally took us almost a full year to get through it just because we were watching all the discs through Netflix and, like, waiting for them to come in the mail, and then, you know, whatever. Holidays came up. The whole month of December, we didn't really watch them, and, you know, there's just been life happened in between, basically. So, anyway, we watched it over the course of 1 year, but there's 7 years worth of stuff crammed in there, so there's a lot of stuff from the early seasons that I don't remember just because we've been watching all these other things so much more recently. But in any case, it's one of the best, if not the best, cop show I've ever seen, just because of the way that it's able to, over the course of such a long period of time, keep your interest in all these different characters and all these different things that they're doing. The strike team, who consists of, you know, Vic Mackey and Shane Vendrell and Ronnie Gardocki and Lemansky, all these guys, they just get further and further and further into this hole that they dig for themselves. And it's pretty amazing to watch the way that these writers back then were able to, I say back then as if this was a long time ago, the show was airing like in the early 2000s, and I think came to an end in like 2008 or something. So it wasn't that long ago. But anyway, the way that they were able to continually get these guys into worse situations and then have them somehow scramble their way out of them at the last minute. I'm not going to spoil what happens really for any major plot points or anything, because I want people to go out and check the show, check out the show if you haven't seen it. But man, the last season makes everything totally worthwhile, I think. There are a couple of those low moments where you're like, what's going on? This is like a little bit unnecessarily complicated with different gang elements and things like that that kind of blur the story a bit. But the way that everything comes together in the very end is really, really satisfying. And the series finale in particular is fantastic. So I just want to give a shout out to creator Sean Ryan and all the people involved with The Shield. Really, really great show.
But how does it compare to Lone Star?
Lone Star, I mean, far and away a better show, undoubtedly, in the two episodes.
Because you put The Shield into one of your favorite cop shows that you've ever seen that was on television within the last 10 years, whatever the list was. How does it side up against Lone Star?
I love that you, like, in your mind, I make all of these lists with these ridiculous filters on them.
Like, you have to be so specific because you don't want to be called out like later in life.
Right.
You said The Shield was the best cop show you ever saw in the last 10 years.
No, I said it was the best cop show on Thursday nights between the hour of 8 and 9 on cable television.
On basic cable with less than 15 episodes per season, starring a bald main character with the last name V. Mackey.
Love it.
So better than, but worse than Lone Star?
I can't compare it to Lone Star, Tyler.
It's a cop show.
Lone Star wasn't a cop show.
No, he was part, like, loner, part cop star.
You right? are showing a wildly misunderstood, like, a fundamental misunderstanding.
I missed the whole point of that show.
It's Lone Star, but I don't blame you because that series only lasted 3 total episodes before its ultimate cancellation. So,
but it's one of my favorite cop shows that were ever less than 5 episodes on national media cable. What's Fox considered? Like, that's not basic cable, is it?
It's like network television.
Network television with the guy. I don't even know who that guy's from. He was in Star Wars, I think.
Who, the main guy?
Yeah, the Lone Star.
The main guy in Lone Star
that wasn't from Spaceballs.
You're confusing him with Bill Pullman's character in Spaceballs.
No. The guy who plays in Star Wars Episode 3.
I don't know anything about that.
Padme gives Leia to Bail Organa, and I think the guy who plays Bail Organa is Lone Star.
Okay, his name is James. I don't know if that's true, but the guy who actually played the main character in Lone Star, his name is James Walk, W-O-L-K, and he actually played Max's boyfriend in Happy Endings. Max, played by Adam Pally on that show, the guy that everybody loved.
Okay, then that's not the guy, Bail Organa, somebody else. I'm going to put up a side-to-side because they look very similar.
Okay, all right. Okay, so with
that... There should definitely be a show named Lone Star about Lone Star from Spaceballs.
Only if Bill Pullman can reprise his role, I think.
Rest in peace, John Candy.
R.I.P. Lone Star. All right, so with that, let's jump into our review of Heat.
You're very stupid, but even so, you probably know what this is. Are you scared? I bet I'm scaring the shit out of you.
Why don't you let me just walk out of here?
Oh, you're gonna leave, Nick? The question is, what kind of shape you're gonna be in when you do? You see, Nick? If I let you walk out free as air, I'd want people to know how sweet I am. So tell me. Talk to me now! Tell me about my good qualities. And if I believe you, free as air.
You're a peach of a guy. You're A number one. You're a swell fella.
Peach of a guy.
Yeah.
You've failed so far, Nick. I like you. I do. So I'll give you just one more shot. So go on. Tell me about my good qualities.
All right, so Heat came out in 1986. It is an action thriller written by William Goldman, who is the same dude who wrote The Princess Bride.
Oh, sorry.
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, I thought you were going to lead it up for me to answer, but...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't want to steal your thunder.
No, not at all. So he wrote Marathon Man, which we talked about on this podcast before.
Oh, that's right.
Heat, The Princess Bride. He wrote Twins, apparently. You know what Twins
classic.
Is. Last Action Hero he did some work on.
What?
Ghost in the Darkness, The General's Daughter. A Few Good Men, I guess. He was like a consultant or something. That's based on Aaron Sorkin's play. So this dude has gotten around. He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. That's like one of the big ones that he's known for, which is a really great movie. You and I watched that before, right, Tyler?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? We haven't watched it.
Well, not on this podcast, but like years ago. Did we know?
I think we had it recorded, but we never got to it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, that's a great movie. you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
A long time ago. Long time ago.
Yeah, definitely good stuff.
Couldn't tell you a thing about it, though.
So, one of the most fascinating things to me about Heat is that they're doing a remake of it. So here's the thing. Heat, the 1986 version that we're about to talk about, is based on a novel by William Goldman. And then William Goldman wrote the screenplay for this movie that we're about to discuss. Directed by a bunch of people. We'll get into that stuff in a little bit.
You have me so far.
Okay, and then just a couple months ago, news came out that they are doing a remake of Heat with Jason Statham in the Burt Reynolds role, and Brian De Palma is going to be directing it, and William Goldman is going to be writing the screenplay for his own remake. So, all of these things just made me really fascinated as to why this movie is getting all this attention and, like, why they feel like this needs to be done. I think all of that kind of was must have been factored into the Apple II for it to choose Heat.
Oh, it definitely was, and that's why I bashed it to pieces. Figuratively.
Okay, so...
I can't destroy the Apple II, people, come on.
So... based on that, I can tell that you're not pleased with this film. So why don't you tell me what you thought
about the
Burt Reynolds film Heat?
Let me tell you a little something about this movie, Ben.
Okay.
It gives you the impression that there's going to be heat. And when I think heat, I think, oh, yeah, like sex or guns or explosions or things that are hot. Not much in here. I would describe this movie as shawful, which is a combination of phrases meaning shitty, awful, and full of awful shit.
Okay.
So it was Burt Reynolds, yeah, and I had fun.
Somebody
with
add that to Urban Dictionary immediately.
Shawful. Shawful. I had fun with Burt Reynolds in Gator. I've had fun with Burt Reynolds in Archer and a slew of other films. Heat, did not have fun. Did not enjoy it. And I'm kind of angry. Kind of angry about this.
Okay.
Because I thought it was going to be awesome, and they were trying to pander to me, too, as far as a viewer. They were like, oh, look, here's smooth jazz while he walks the streets of Las Vegas. I'm like, okay. That's cool. And then they do it like 20,000 times, but he never does anything cool.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, well, F you for utilizing one of my favorite aspects of a film and never following through on
it. Just wasting it, yeah.
Waste.
Waste. So the thing about this movie that that stuck out to me the most is that it's just an ugly, ugly movie. Nothing about it is visually interesting in any way.
No, it's terrible, Ben. It
reminds me of watching. I'm not sure, I should have looked this up. I'm not sure when the Lifetime Network came into existence, but it reminds me of what a Lifetime movie would have looked like in the late 80s.
This was totally made for TV, if it was made for TV at all.
I mean,
it was like a PBS original movie or something.
Apparently, it did come to theaters. It had a $17 million budget and made $2 million at the box office, which is way more than it even deserves, because this movie is terrible.
Like, you can tell it was going to be a bad movie because when I started it, like, it didn't give, like, a Universal or, like some type of logo from a company or a studio. It was just like, here's the movie. And I was like, oh, no, this is going to be like Vampire Bikini Beach all over again. Like, it's just no one picked it up, and it was just like, I don't know. What do you have any?
It was distributed by New Century Vista Film Company, which I've never heard of in my life. So there's that.
Cassius Ells had something to do with it, and I thought for sure that was Cary Elles' pseudonym. Because he was working closely with William Goldman for so many years, I guess.
That would be pretty amazing.
And then I thought it was him at the beginning, the bald guy, but it wasn't.
So, okay, so the opening scene, right? Let's talk about it from this point on.
Yeah, let's just go through this whole movie.
So, opening scene, Burt Reynolds' character, whose name is Nick Escalante, but people refer to him as Mex for some reason.
Terrible.
I don't know why. That's never
on a cool name, so they're like, give him a really dorky name and then we'll just call him something dorky too.
Yeah, so it's kind of confusing because you're not sure like which one is actually his real name. Like, some people call him Nick, other people call him Max, and you're like, wait, what is going on? And then it sounds like they're saying Max, so it's like, what's happening? So that was poorly done.
I blame the writers.
So yeah, Mr. Goldman.
Mr. Goldman had no idea who he was talking about during the writing of this script. He's like, wait a second. Was this Burt Reynolds' character or that other guy?
Max, whatever.
It's got a $30,000 budget.
So basically the opening scene of this movie is like Hitch before Hitch came out, where Burt Reynolds is paid by a dorky guy named Osgood to be an intimidating drunk at a bar. And Osgood meets his lover there and tries to convince her to move away to Atlantic City with him. And then we don't know this as it happens, though.
And so, I thought that was pretty funny. I thought the movie started out fairly okay because, you know, he was in the bar and he was playing pool. And I'm like, all right, Burt Reynolds doing his thing. Leather jacket. What's up?
And he was like such a colossal ass, too, in the beginning. And you're like, oh, man, how am I going to watch an entire movie with this character? Like, this guy is so unlikable. He's like, there's nothing cool about him. He's like an amalgamation of things that you think are cool, but he's actually just a giant dick.
Yeah.
So
well, that's generally the case anyway. people who think they're cool are usually huge dicks.
Right. So...
Yeah, so you get kind of uncomfortable, but then you slowly start to realize that it's like a facade, and then you start laughing because he's being so ridiculous and such a douche, or fake douche, that you're like, oh, it's just Burt Reynolds goofing around.
Well, even before it's revealed that Osgood had paid him off and they had like an understanding beforehand, I was like, okay, Burt Reynolds is being, you know, this big asshat, whatever. He goes outside and Osgood just kicks the crap out of him, basically. And I was like, all right, sweet, this is actually going to turn into... a good movie. You know, it's like subverting expectations, blah, blah, blah.
Like and a then, con man movie or something.
Yeah, and then, well, not even that. Like, just the fact that he's this big and bad guy or whatever, and then he gets his crap handed to him, I thought, like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe this is going somewhere interesting. And then it had him, like, get paid off, and I was like, that's just kind of a lame thing, you know? It's like, it's just kind of a lame excuse. And then,
yeah,
and it's kind of a, it's a, I don't want to say a weak opening, because I did enjoy it, and I think it, you know, it sets up what you think the character is going to be, and then he's like, not that, but.
That's why it's bad, because it sets up one thing, and then they don't follow through with it. Like, they do totally different things with him.
Yeah.
And it's like, ugh.
But even.
Like, it just falls flat.
Yeah, even, okay, so he's like actively unlikable in the opening scene, but even. Like you said, you know, a lot of times Burt Reynolds movies are known for, like, his ridiculous persona kind of taking over whatever character he's supposed to play. and where he's basically playing Burt Reynolds, you know, in a lot of his movies. And that's not really the case here. I mean, I'm not saying that every movie that Burt Reynolds is in, he should be playing that kind of prototypical Burt Reynolds character. But this one... He was just kind of like a miserable guy, like wandering around, like he was a gambling addict. He wanted to go to Venice, but never had the balls to actually go through with it. I mean, that whole sequence where he was playing blackjack in the casino, where he wins $100,000, which is the number he's been looking for, and then decides to...
Don't even get me started.
Decides to bet it all just to win more, you know, just because, like, he thinks he needs it, and we find out later it's because he's a compulsive gambler.
Big reveal.
That whole scene is like a repetition of the first scene in the movie, where he gets his ass handed to him for being, like, a badass, except it's real, and that makes it more depressing, because the first scene, we find out later, was set up, and this one is not. Like, he's just this guy that has a problem and, you know, thinks he dreams about all these things, but actually just doesn't care about moving forward in life at all. And it's just like, ah, man, this movie just kind of, it really, like, takes the wind out of your sails.
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, the story is completely invisible here. There's no coherent storyline. Like, it feels more like the adventures of Nick Escalante than anything. Like a, I don't know, like a cheap, very cheap Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And, yeah, like, he runs into this girl, and she's been beaten up, and then he meets this guy who wants him to teach him the ways of, like, Reynolds, Burt Reynolds-isms.
Yeah.
And it's like, and like he's annoying, and Burt Reynolds is pushing the line of annoying because he's so moronic. When he refuses a $200 tip, and I'm like, okay, dude, all right, seriously, you're bitch ass poor, and you refuse a $200 tip just because of something in your brain.
Yeah.
It's just a completely disagreeable character. I thought maybe like a Harry Callahan, like they were trying to make like a new Dirty Harry series, or as I call him. Dirty Sanchez, Harry.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Because of the mustache.
Yep.
And I don't know, man. His name's Nick Escalante.
Yeah.
I think that would be a cool little nickname.
I don't know, dude. I think there's...
Anyway, I just did not enjoy this movie at all.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrible.
You know, I can see why they're going to remake it as a Jason Statham movie. I'll say that.
Now we got to deal with and that's the other thing. And I think this is what they're going to do wrong is they're going to have Jason Statham, and everyone's going to be like, "Oh yeah, it's going to be a Jason Statham movie called Heat, and he's going to blow up stuff, and he's going to bang chicks." And then it's going to be like, "I'm a compulsive gambler. Oi, put it all on three."
I think,
and then he loses it all, and he's like, I'm going to drink myself.
I would like to think that William Goldman has the wherewithal and the industry knowledge to realize that this movie is a total failure on every level and wouldn't just write the same exact screenplay.
No. He's hoping that no one saw Heat in 86, and he's just going to rewrite the same thing and be like, oh, well, let's try again 20 years later.
I think Brian De Palma as a director probably wouldn't direct an exact copy of the same script.
A Lifetime original movie.
I can see Statham doing a direct copy of this script, but I also think that Statham is at this point now where he's done so many of these movies, he can probably, if he's not already, I haven't checked on this, if he's not already, he can probably be producing a lot of these. And I'm guessing he has his own production company at this point, kind of guiding his career and like handling a lot of the day-to-day elements of being on set and stuff like that. So I think he probably has a little bit more control than we think. So I'm guessing story input and stuff like that, he actually might be able to have some influence there. And I think, especially with the latter half of this movie basically being that guy, I don't even know what his name was. Nick Escalante called him Duke, but Wikipedia says his name is Cyrus Kinnick.
Peter called him Duke because the guy didn't have a cool nickname.
Yeah. So when Duke basically pays him off to become as cool as he is and like learn all these life lessons and become, you know, like lead a braver life or whatever, that is the storyline behind The Mechanic, which was the Charles Bronson movie that Jason Statham did the remake of in early 2011 with Ben Foster. So it shares a lot of elements with that, and I think even as somebody who does a lot of really similar boiled down action movies, even Statham would probably see those similarities and be like, all right, I don't want to do just this again, because this might as well be called The Mechanic 2 if we just do a direct copy of
Transporter 3.
This, well, Transporter 3 was god awful too, but we won't
Yeah, and like Burt Reynolds had made a bunch of movies where he was like this typecast character, Burt Reynolds, and then they're like, okay, well, let's just do that again, except he's in Las Vegas, and then they failed.
Yeah,
and he's just this tired, like, he's not young anymore, and he's not at the age yet where he can pull like a Clint Eastwood, like, I'm old but I'm also tough. Like, he says, I guess he's in his 40s, so he's like trying to look young, but he can tell, I don't know, he looks like he dyed his hair.
Yep.
He's wearing like that leather jacket, and he's still sporting like the jeans up to his chest tucked in all the way, and he's like walking around, he's like, yeah, look at all these ladies, and then he's like hanging out with Ugo, the girl with the gun in her mouth or whatever, got beat up at the beginning of the movie.
Ugo, like, the girl with the gun.
And he's like, oh, dang, I'm not going to help you out. Oh, wait, yes, I am, but I'm going to come and tell you stuff, and then I'm going to dress up like a pimp.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's like another cheap, like, master of disguise kind of movie where he's like a failure at everything. Like, he's... Everyone turns to him to be this great bodyguard character, and he's like, yeah, whatever. I don't know.
And you
it's
think
like he's like, not even part of a movie. He's just like, he knows he's in a movie, and he's just like, I'm getting paid, whatever. I got paid up front.
Yeah, and you think, like, with the way that he goes, with the way that he's so, like, calm about everything that he does, that he has this, like, deserved sense of badassery, that, like, he's lived this life and proven to himself that he's, like, you know, that he can handle anything. Like, I think at one point the girl was, like, saying that she never would have led him into that situation if she had known that there were three guys. And he's like, don't lie to me, whatever, it's fine. And she's like, okay, if there were five guys in there, I wouldn't have led you in. But you probably could handle five guys, too. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff in there that's, like, it really builds up the mythos of Nick Escalante. But the movie itself never does anything to justify why he has that kind of swagger that he has. Like, he dresses as a pimp in this terrible master of disguise thing, like you said. This is an awful pimp costume. And,
hey, I'm Nick Escalante, the pimp.
And he just walks into Danny DeMarco's massive hotel room, which was actually really sweet looking. And this is the guy that beat up the female character.
Okay.
That he's trying to help out.
Yes. Her mouth. Yeah.
I'll go, as you mentioned. I think her name is Holly, actually. But
doesn't matter. Don't care
it,
for this.
It kind of doesn't. she was a terrible actress, too, by the way, while we're talking about that. I felt
just
like
her?
I felt like she was... It's maybe that, too. I felt like this character, this actress was legitimately deaf or had some sort of just really, really terrible accent, or maybe a combination of both, because...
She was from the South, I think. That was her accent.
That was the worst Southern accent I've ever heard then, because it sounded like she was deaf. And that might be harsh, but anybody who can watch this movie, this movie is available on Netflix. Watch instantly.
Those rodeos are pretty loud, Ben.
Is that what people do in the South?
Yeah, so we just go to nonstop rodeos. Just the idea of those bulls just hopping it and skipping it for like 8 seconds is just fascinating.
And then trampling everyone's ears.
Trampling the clowns.
Anyway, so he goes into this hotel room to kind of get. To do what? Like, get revenge on these guys?
I have no
like,
idea.
You know, what is he thinking he's gonna do? Like, there's two huge dudes in there that are his bodyguards, and this guy, Danny DeMarco, played by Neil Barry, is, like, the most non-threatening movie villain of all time. The guy looks like he's 19 Terrible. Years old, and
this movie's in a constant state of flaccidity. Like, nothing ever gets amped up. Like, he walks in, you're like, all right, here's a big showdown. And then they talk, and then he kicks off someone's kneecap.
Yes.
Which is just so ridiculous that it was kind of funny, but not in a cool, look, an action scene funny. It was,
yeah.
This guy just got his kneecap kicked off, and he's just standing there screaming instead of...
Yeah, so
or falling down or
so Danny, yeah, Danny DeMarco is supposed to be this big threatening villain, and he stands there in a bathrobe the whole time, and like he's a skinny guy that looks like he's a kid, like he just graduated from high school or something. And Nick Escalante is supposed to be, according to the mythos, this big badass, like former soldier of fortune who's been written up in Mercenary Magazine before,
right? Or Dirty Nick, as we're calling him now.
And then for some, like somebody comes at him or something, and then this begins one of the worst fight sequences I've ever seen in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
I could agree there.
It's choppy. It's slow motion. There are freeze frames in it, like inexplicably.
Like when you beat a level in Street Fighter and like they die and they're like, no, no, no. No,
yeah,
then,
yeah,
that's ground. It was all that
very similar. They used snap zooms to imply punches or impact between kicks or something, and then they had clearly a Burt Reynolds stunt double doing like massive jump kicks to people's faces, where he jumps like 9 feet in the air to do it, and like. There's no way that Burt Reynolds in that pimp suit could do the moves that they're implying that he's doing. And they weren't even that impressive. You know, he throws his medallion at someone and hits him in the face, and that's it. Like,
and he flies backwards, like, almost through the window. I'm like, that medallion had to have weighed, like, 100 pounds for it to do damage like that.
And I think those guys died. I think they died because...
Okay, yeah, that's... Okay. You know what? I hate this movie so much, I'm going to assume they died.
I think they said, like... He's like, what happened to those guys was nothing in comparison to what I'm happened to you. And, like, the guy, Danny DeMarco, was like, he killed two of my guys, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah. What?
I think he was just accusing him. I think DeMarco killed those guys.
Oh, okay.
With a gun. But I like the idea of that guy, like, bleeding from the kneecap until he dies.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
The other guy, I don't know, just maybe he suffocated when he landed on that sofa from that one kick.
Yeah. So there's a crime boss named Baby that gets involved at one point.
He's not even the great crime boss.
No, he's just a guy in a suit. Like, there's nothing threatening about him. He says that Nick Escalante is playing a game for his life. Like, he's gambling for his life. Or, no, I'm sorry, on trial for his life.
it doesn't matter.
And, yeah, nothing really happens. And then, like, later on when Duke comes in to Nick's, like, terrible rundown office with like it looks like a travel agency because
he sublets a desk with like this lawyer office above or below a dance studio.
Yeah.
He goes, "Hey," so he walks in one day and he's just like, "Hey, lawyer guy," and he's like, "Oh, what's up, Burt Reynolds?" Or Dirty Nick, whatever they call him over there. He goes, "Yeah, I need to sublet like this desk over here and I'll just put up a bunch of Venice posters and hang out and people will come and talk to me." And the lawyer guy's just like, "Alright, whatever, cool."
Yeah.
And I think that was the guy, and I'm trying to put a face with an 80s sitcom, but I believe the lawyer was from some 80s sitcom. I think it was Saved by the Bell.
Huh.
It might have been...
Was he the Max from Saved by the Bell?
Might have been. Horrifically, no. It might have been like Benson or something really obscure. You know what? He was on... I lost it again. I thought maybe Welcome Back, Cotter.
Okay. But
that wasn't it.
Either. I've never seen any of those shows.
It doesn't matter. He's from something.
Okay.
But, so it's just Burt Reynolds. Yeah, he like whores himself out. He calls himself a chaperone.
Yeah.
Not to be affiliated with the Triple H movie.
Right.
But he goes on between something and something, like couches and churches in the yellow pages or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, "Oh, yeah, you say you're a chaperone. Why don't you come follow me around while I go gamble?" And he's like, "All right." So he takes on this job and he just doesn't do it. He's like the actor in this movie. They just don't do their jobs. He like abandons this guy like halfway through the night.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm getting paid to do this, but I don't care about what you're doing. I'm just going to walk away and
that's
talk
what everyone to, in this movie thought while
talk
they
were to cocktail waitresses. So there's a scene where like the woman who was abused kind of comes in and gets revenge on Danny DeMarco in what I thought was going to be like a Sin City-esque thing where like this dude's genitals just get completely obliterated, but apparently she uses like cutting shears to just like cut a small like
just nicks him
basically
which is Escalante's finishing move. He just nicks off a piece of your penis. Tell him Nick sent you.
With a karate chop somehow.
he's known for using sharpened edges
of his own hand.
Of his own hand.
So
nicked. You just got nicked.
Oh, wow. I like it. Man, I hope that happens in the remake.
Yeah. Why don't we write it, William Goldman? Totally improve it.
So I've got to say, I just want to kind of shine the spotlight on the scene where Duke gets killed, or what I thought he
Spoiler
was
alert.
Killed. He's not actually, doesn't actually die in like one of the most bullshit outs, like cop out that I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Hey, Ben, seriously though, realistically, like, 3 bullets to the chest, I don't think kills you anymore.
No, but no.
Like, science has advanced to a point where you get shot in the middle of nowhere, and you're immediately rescued.
Yeah, 1986, science could totally cover 3 bullets.
3 bullets to the chest, you're in the middle of nowhere, everyone that saw you get shot leaves, and somehow you end up in the hospital alive.
Yep. Yep.
And no worse for the wear.
Totally believable. It's like in the end of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, they make fun of that exact thing. So that's another reason that Shane Black's movie is so awesome. Also, random connection, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is kind of a Christmas movie. Heat is apparently a Christmas movie. It takes place around Christmas time. I'm going to say this is one of the worst Christmas films I've ever seen.
One of the worst Christmas films that is action thriller, right. Starring Burt Reynolds.
Between the years 83 and 89.
Post Cannonball Run, but pre Three Men and a Lady.
Okay.
Tom Selleck.
So.
Has Burt Reynolds even really done anything since like 1990?
I don't know. I mean, he was in that movie Driven that Sylvester Stallone, I think, was in. Like, the IndyCar racing movie from, like, the year 2000. Do you remember that?
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was bad.
IndyCar racing.
So, anyway, yeah, Duke's death. I just wanted to point out.
The not death.
Yeah, no, it was kind of ridiculous. Like, or it was very ridiculous. I mean, he's in that terrible office that we talked about, Nick's office. And a bunch of guys come in. And basically Duke like sacrifices himself, like jumps in front of 3 bullets to the chest that are intended for Nick. And then Nick just like defenestrates himself, which is a real word that I found out recently.
Thanks, through a window.
Yeah, thanks to our friend, longtime podcast listener Sean Bozeman, pointed that word out to me a few years ago, which I love. Defenestrate, to be hurled out of a window or something.
Yeah. I like how it happens so often that people are like, man, we need a word for that. Like, we can't just keep saying that guy just threw himself through a window.
Yeah.
We gotta come up with a word for this. It's happening seriously all the time.
Yeah, so that happens. And, like, of course, that's shot in, like, this epic slow-mo that's, like, totally unnecessary, like most of this movie. And then he's
on the first floor. It's not like he needs to jump out to go to the floor below. He could have just walked through the door.
And then the best thing about that whole sequence, right, is, like, he goes out of the window. These guys are shooting at him. He goes out of the window. They run outside, and they don't go to where they last saw him immediately on the ground floor on the other side of the smashed window, because that's where he is, laying in wait and probably in pain from just having smashed through a plate glass window. They run all the way to the end of the street, and they're like, you go that way, you go that way, find him. And they're like hundreds of yards away.
Right.
And they didn't see him run that way.
If they had just waited a second, they would have realized that he did not run to the street.
He just jumped through a window. Yeah.
I think he's still laying right there, guys.
That was kind of awesome.
Shoot a little bit past the window.
And then thus begins a supposedly climactic but actually pretty boring chase sequence through a bunch of abandoned what are those things called?
Masonries, maybe?
Yeah, like maybe
stone mills.
Yeah, it's out like in not a quarry, but there are like
And they make bricks and stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's like a cement block factory, basically.
That's the term.
So
cement block factory. And it's not really a climax because the whole movie has been building towards nothing. It's actually lost ground. Like, it had been building, it's actually been losing ground, so it's really a return to normalcy as opposed to a climax.
It kind of is in that regard. It's kind of like you're angry as you're watching it because you're like, the entire movie should have been this, not the last 10 minutes. Like, right. This is a joke. This whole movie is it's a cosmic joke that it's playing on the audience. So
it's a Lifetime original movie.
this one of the guys that works for DeMarco, is like one of his nameless henchmen, gets javelined through the chest with a piece of rebar, which I thought was interesting.
A la Schwarzenegger in, what was that one where he goes, let off some steam?
Oh, yeah.
Was that Commando?
Yeah, let off some steam, Bennett. Yeah.
I only thought Schwarzenegger was the only human able to penetrate the human body with just like a 10-yard javelin throw.
Right.
Burt Reynolds has made it into that league of gentlemen.
Yeah. There's one guy that was doused in some sort of chemical, and then Burt Reynolds pulls like a Tony Jaa move and kicks a light bulb that's like multiple feet over this guy's head.
15 feet. Minimum.
I don't know about that, but like an unreasonable height for Burt Reynolds to ever jump in his life, even if in his heyday, let alone in his 40s. And he shatters the light bulb, and then supposedly like the sparks or something land on this guy, and he instantly catches on fire. And then right after that, like, this guy has just caught on fire probably 3 or 4 seconds prior.
Hasn't even burned through his clothes yet.
Yeah, exactly. Danny DeMarco and all of his other friends run up, and they just like stand there and watch this guy burn, and they're just like, damn it. Like, I don't remember what they say, but basically they're just like, oh, Escalante got the better of us again. And then like they don't even try to help their friend in any way. Like, they easily could have just removed his jacket and he would have been fine.
Right. But that's what I was saying while I was watching it, and I was like doing the voice of the guy. I'm like, seriously, guys, I am on fire. Help me out. There's like dust and sand everywhere. Just pour it on me. No? Nobody? Okay, walk away.
It's like Will Ferrell in the Austin Powers movies, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, and then so I thought that was really stupid, right? And then little did I know this movie would pull an even more idiotic move right after that. So Danny DeMarco
Oh, okay.
He runs out of bullets trying to shoot at Escalante, and Burt Reynolds escapes. And it shows DeMarco pulling the trigger like six extra times to just make sure that we know that he doesn't have any ammunition, right? And then it smash cuts.
That sound means I'm out of bullets.
Yeah. So then it smash cuts to the Danny DeMarco guy walking into his really extravagant hotel with his gun, and Reynolds has somehow beat him there and is just laying in wait, and it's completely dark. And then what happens? He shoots his gun that they just showed us was completely empty. They like made this huge deal about proving that he has no ammunition. And then in between, he, what, stopped at a store and went and purchased more ammo? Are we supposed to think that? Like, it makes
sense. He stopped at the Pawn Stars pawn shop.
I mean, there's a logic that this movie should have that just totally doesn't.
Well, my favorite part is that, like, Burt Reynolds keeps egging him on to fire his bullets in the apartment. He's like, go ahead, shoot me, whatever. And the guy just keeps shooting. And he goes, you only have one bullet left? And the guy's like, oh, shoot, I only have one bullet left. Like, I'm going to have to make this one count, right? And Burt Reynolds is like, he's right there. Like, he's unarmed, allegedly, because he's gone on record as saying, I don't use guns. I just use my fists.
Mm-hmm.
Nick people in the penis. And so this guy has one bullet, and all he has to do is shoot it in Burt Reynolds' head, like, and end this film once and for all.
Yep.
And what does he do, Ben? What does he do? He shits himself, he pisses down his leg, and fires the gun into his own head instead of maybe running out of the apartment, running away, anything, giving up.
The most anticlimactic action movie ending ever, I think.
Like, I don't know. I was trying to guess what would happen. Like, okay, I hear the gunshot, and I go, there's no way he shot him. There's absolutely no explanation as to why Burt Reynolds, in his whisper voice, scared this guy so much that he reconsidered his whole life and said, no, there's no way out of this.
I thought the same thing.
I am caught in my own hotel room. I've got him cornered, but there's some way that I can't get out of this. I'm going to shoot myself.
And the thing about that, too, is like when he walks into the dark hotel room, like, well, let's forget the ammo situation. Let's pretend he actually did stop by and read.
My babies, yeah.
Yeah. So he walks into the place. Bullets. Burt Reynolds moves exactly to two total locations in that scene, right? He starts out the scene in one spot, and then it shows him crawling to the underside of the pool table. So
a riveting scene where he carpet drags across the room at a blistering speed.
So he's in two locations in the entirety of this sequence, right? So Danny DeMarco walks in, and Reynolds is talking to him the entire time, and he cannot pinpoint where his voice is coming from. It has never been established that Reynolds
is... It's not a hall of mirrors. He has no bearing on the direction of anything. Exactly. He's in a hotel room.
Yeah, it's never been established that that Reynolds is a... What are those guys called? Like a puppeteer or something where he can like throw his voice? Like there's right. No...
A ventriloquist.
Yeah, ventriloquist. Thank you. There's no mentions of any sort of special abilities or anything. He's literally just talking at the guy. He's not even whispering, really. He's openly taunting him and just saying, I'm right here. Keep stepping in your direction. You're heading directly for me. Come kill me. And he, like you said, is unarmed. I think at one point the camera pans down and shows that he actually has been shot in the chest or stomach or something. He's like holding his hand over some blood on his front of his body. And then, yeah, the guy, DeMarco, just ends up shooting himself in the head. And it's like, wow, right. The audience doesn't even get the satisfaction of watching Burt Reynolds kill this guy.
And so, he's smart enough to do this to this guy, to vocally convince somebody to shoot themselves.
Yeah.
But he can't keep $100,000 in pocket without wasting it away.
Right.
And this guy, DeMarco, all he had to do was shoot the last bullet to draw this guy out. He wouldn't even just shoot it up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Draw this guy out, push him down the stairs or something.
Yep.
Like anything would have worked. But this guy, and everything that he had, this sweet hotel room, he just had to wait it out.
I think DeMarco saw the slow-mo amazingness freeze frame fight sequence from before and was, you know, I mean, I guess if I saw somebody pull those kind of amazing moves, I would probably be a little hesitant too.
He might actually saw the carpet drag.
Yeah.
If he can move at that speed, jeez.
I think Escalante at one point also literally threatened to rip his face off, and that, I mean, that must have been too much for him, so.
Yeah, it's John Travolta territory right there.
And then it cuts to Duke surviving in the hospital, which is just utter bullshit. There's no way. And then he ends up...
Who woke up with the doctor? He's like, hey, look at a bit actor right here. Okay, I went to Harvard. I'm always right.
Yeah.
You're like, who the hell are you? Like, get out of this closing scene, please.
That's probably, like, the guy, the director himself or something.
This movie's been bad enough. We don't need tripe jokes.
Yeah.
And then to just close it in the beauty that represents this piece of horrific cinema, Burt Reynolds ends up in Venice.
Yeah. And everybody's waiting for Heat 2, like, when him and Duke take on Venice together.
It was Duke the one pushing the gondola? Like...
No, it wasn't. I was looking. I was trying to see if maybe Duke was on a separate gondola right behind him or something. But...
Yeah. Venice looks kind of like a dump. Like, it was pretty dumpy there.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably just everything looked like that in the 1980s. But
I was hoping, like, he would be, like, on the gondola at the Las Vegas hotel that's supposed to look like Venice. Like, that would have been funny.
Yeah.
Like, he stayed in Las Vegas, so he went to Venice instead, and, like, in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But no, he literally went to Venice, and we're supposed to have, like, this FX2 moment where they're like, oh, yeah, in the next movie, he's going to be in Venice.
Right.
Like, no one wants to see that.
Yeah.
No one wanted to see Heat. So why would we want to see Heat 2?
It really didn't.
Hot in Venice.
So that's all I had as
Dirty
far as...
Nick in Venice.
What?
Heat 2, Dirty Nick in Venice.
That's all I had as far as, like, the stuff that I hadn't written down, but I did want to read what Wikipedia has to say about the production of this movie. Tyler, do you mind?
Sure, no problem. I am all up for this now.
All right, so here we go. So I'm just reading from Wikipedia at this point. Burt Reynolds was paid $2 million to play the lead role. Robert Altman was at one stage going to direct the movie, but left after one day of filming. So there's director number one. He was replaced by Dick Richards, who did not get along with Reynolds. At one stage, Reynolds hit Richards during filming, and the director left the project, being replaced by Jerry Jameson. So there's directors two and three.
I left after 1 minute of watching, so I know how they feel.
Richards later returned, so there's director number four, only to fall from a camera crane and wind up in the hospital. Two other directors were involved in the movie. Richards took credit as, Wikipedia says D.M. Richards, but the actual opening credits of the movie say R.M. Richards. And he says, there's a quote here that says, I had nothing to do with the editing of the film, he said later. I was one of five directors. All I did was the casting and 13 days of shooting. I should have taken my name off of it entirely. End quote. A Directors Guild arbitration ruled that Richards was responsible for 41% of the finished film and Jerry Jameson 31%. Richards later tried to sue Reynolds for $25 million for the assault.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
what was the motivating factor to getting Heat made, or like people actually calling for Heat?
I mean, it must have been just the fact that it was based on a William Goldman novel, and Goldman himself wrote the screenplay. You know, like maybe he and Burt Reynolds had, like, maybe Reynolds was looking for a star vehicle or something, and this just happened to fall on his desk at the right time. I don't think the public was really clamoring for it, as evidenced by, you know, its $2 million box office haul. So I don't know.
Just Burt Reynolds' pay.
I think, yeah, basically.
It made just enough to pay Burt Reynolds.
I think this movie is just kind of like a perfect example of just, like, a forgettable, terrible movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm
not only that, it's a forgettable movie overall through all the decades.
Yeah, that's true too. I think I'm really fascinated to see what they end up doing with this remake, because after watching this, I'm like, okay, the remake is automatically going to be terrible. Like, I don't know what they're going to do to keep the same story and characters and things like that and make this into a good movie, because I'm not even convinced that that can be done because the story is so terrible. So Goldman is going to have to do some massive reworking of a lot of things for this to be good. Plus also, let's be real, Jason Statham doesn't always make good movies. I mean, he makes entertaining action movies.
Transporter 3.
For the most part. But yeah, even that's a perfect example, actually, is like, I love a lot of Jason Statham's movies because they have such awesome action and whatever. Like, the stories are always secondary to that kind of stuff. But there are the occasional Transporter 3.
Transformers.
Transporter 3, or what are some of the other?
Crank
even
2.
Even The Mechanic. Yeah, or Crank 2, which I didn't like at all.
I haven't seen Crank 2.
But
yeah, like, maybe if they make it like a parody of the original film, like Starsky and Hutch, the TV show, kind of crappy.
Mm-hmm.
Starsky and Hutch, the parody of the TV show movie, pretty awesome. Maybe Heat 2012 should be a parody of what Heat was in the 80s, or what Burt Reynolds or these other guys, these kinds of movies were in the 80s, and then actually make it like laugh.
Like a 21 Jump Street style take on it, maybe something like that.
I haven't seen it, so yeah. Sure, not.
Where it's more like action comedy than like serious.
I don't really care for movies, Ben. I don't often go and see them.
I'm on a movie podcast and have been for the past 86 weeks, but I don't care for movies at all.
That's my new project. 86 weeks. It's about a very long gestation of an elephant.
That sounds like a terrible Al Pacino movie. 88 minutes to 86 minutes.
I've been being hunted down for the last 85 weeks. I need to find this guy.
All right, so Tyler, you want to pull the old Apple II?
No, can you get my closing thoughts?
Oh, yeah, sure, let's do that.
Don't watch this movie.
It's as simple as that. I totally agree. This movie is garbage. So, why don't you pull out the old Apple II and let people know
What
movie we're going to be watching.
I said I smash it to pieces. I don't do that to the Apple II. I know humans make mistakes. So should technology.
Mm.
Okay, buddy. Let me pull your lever. Let me pull your lever. 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 Ben, you ready for this?
I am.
Yeah, we're going to be watching next week, time traveling back 20 years before Heat, 1968, the producers, starring that guy from Willy Wonka.
Gene Wilder.
The guy that looks like the guy from The Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason, but it's not Jackie Gleason.
Zero Mostel, yes.
And directed by the guy who directed Spaceballs.
All right, bringing it all back around, Mel Brooks, good stuff.
Mel Brooks, yeah. I recently checked out History of the World, very small portions of History of the World, Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
Not as funny as I remembered it being.
That is not one of Mel Brooks' best, I'll give you that.
Although I remembered as a kid it being pretty funny, and then, of course, the humor that I saw as a 20-something-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I understood why. It's fairly juvenile.
Yeah. Not one of Brooks's.
Although I'm hoping the producers, I hear it's fairly popular.
Yeah, and don't be confused, everyone, because both versions of the producers are available on Netflix. Watch instantly. You can watch both of them if you choose. Obviously, sure. Do whatever you want. But we're only going to be talking about the 1968 version. As far as I know, I mean, maybe I'll watch the original for like part of the media consumed, or I'm sorry, the remake for part of the media consumed section or something like that. We'll see.
The Ferris Bueller version.
Yeah. Okay, so if you guys want to do that, watch along with us, you can shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. If you do, you might sound something like this.
Hey, Ben, it's none other than your number one fan, Michael Chiklis. Hold for applause. As hard as you might try, I'm never, ever going to forgive you for the trash talking you gave to No Ordinary Family. Or should I say no mordinary family? Because it's been canceled. I get to make the jokes here, Trout Sniffer, because I was on the show. Much like Vic Mackey and the scum of that city from The Shield, I'm going to spend the rest of my life hunting you down. And when WrestleMania 50 happens, I'm going to bring Lazy Eye Kavanaugh as my manager, and I'm going to pound you so hard into that panther non-shaped coffin that Julie Benz is going to have flashbacks about your flashbacks. Yeah, it's going to be painful. All the best, Chickless.
See, that, Ben, that's what happens when you piss off the elite.
I guess so, yeah. I mean,
they get angry.
I've got to say, you know, let's officially put Chickless Gate to an end right now, even though apparently Michael Chickless himself refuses to acknowledge my olive branch. So I did, as longtime listeners of the podcast know, had a little bust up with Michael Chickless about his show No Ordinary Family. I wasn't a fan of it after a few episodes. He asked me why I explained, and Tyler blew it up into this huge thing that he referred to as Chickless Gate. And then just at last
night... The world blew it up, and Tyler blew it up.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Ridiculous.
It did...
Michael Chickless is calling in, Ben.
It did get nationwide news coverage. So
TMZ reports Michael Chickless calls into a little-known movie podcast.
In any case, I actually just finished watching The Shield and tweeted at Michael Chickless and said, like, hey, I know you and I had our disagreements about Nick and family, but The Shield was really awesome, so thanks for that. Anyway, yeah. Mark it down as, what is this, April 21st or something, 2012, the end of Chickless Gate has arrived, so.
There. I don't know, man. I don't know. Question mark that.
Okay. So...
I think we got another voicemail, Ben.
I think we do, actually. Let's
from one of our longtime listeners, first-time callers, one of our bigger fans, I think.
Okay.
Let's check it out.
Let's play that. That man does not speak often, and
look
based,
who?
Based, oh, go ahead.
Good old Jason Voorhees. Telling you, that guy, he is a stalwart fan of this show.
Yeah, it had to be none other than Jason Voorhees. If I listened, or, you know, if people listened to the previous episode, episode 85, where we talked about Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th Part 2, they'll recognize Jason's voice because Tyler did an exclusive one-on-one interview with him.
He just said he appreciated the interview just now in the voicemail.
Oh, did he?
I don't know if you got that.
This must be some sort of Family Guy situation where only you can hear Jason Voorhees speaking.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, sure.
I heard.
But he wants to come on as a guest when we watch Friday the 13th Part 7.
Okay.
Before we watch Part 3 through 6.
All right. Only
watch Part 7.
All right.
He wants to come on. He wants to come on and guest. So he's really excited.
Thanks for the voicemail, Mr. Voorhees. Also, speaking of Jason Voorhees, we have two new Twitter followers this week, one of which is at Jason L. Voorhees, and the other one is at Seat Crunch. So thanks for the follows there. You guys can follow us on Twitter. What's that?
The L stands for love.
Oh, Jason loves Voorhees. you guys can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. And subscribe to our new feed in iTunes. I got an email the other day about somebody asking, hey, I love the first 74 episodes of the show. Why did you guys stop doing it? And I had to explain, you have to subscribe to our new feed or whatnot, our new iTunes account, which you can find by going to the iTunes store and just type in GeekTyrant-NJNM. And
can you update the description on the Mavio iTunes?
I cannot. Mavio will not let me do any sort of editing to anything. So,
yay!
They have locked us out. Yeah.
yay!
All right. So, let's go ahead and finish up the character name game before we bring this one to an end. So the character's name for this week is Mr. Rad. Mr. Rad, R-A-D. Do you have any idea, Tyler, what character, or I'm sorry, what movie the character is from?
Yes, I do. Mr. Rad was played by Steve Harvey in a movie about dancing, step dancing, and I think it was called, what was that movie called? Shoot. It was a bunch of kids, and they were all like, oh, yeah, we got to win this dancing competition. And Mr. Rad, like, at the very end was like, don't worry, I took care of Emerald. Everything's cool. Yep. And that was, like, one, like, loose end that wasn't really explained.
I think all of those things happened in this movie.
All of those things happened in, was it a Bring It On movie?
It was not. It's close, though. It's,
Was it Stomp It Out, Stomp the Yard?
No, not Stomp the Yard. It's,
Does it have stomp in the title?
No, it does. It does have an S word, though.
Street it up?
Nope. It's pretend that you are a high class butler or something, or you're at a high class.
Serve it up.
Nope. Close. Serving. Though. Nope.
You got served.
Yes, you got served. There we go. Oh, nice.
Pretend you're a butler.
I don't even think that's accurate, actually. I think
that's pretty. It got me there.
Wait,
the movie's about butlering?
Like, do you know what the...
Mr. Harvey, who I really enjoy. I think he's hilarious. He hosts Family Feud now, and I think he's really funny. I don't know if he's in the movie, but he wrote the book about the movie Think Like a Man.
Mm-hmm. And he also does appear in it, yes.
Okay. But I think I recently wrote on Twitter, I was like, think like a man. If this doesn't have explosions and boobs in it, somebody got something wrong.
Yeah, it's like a Dr. Pepper 10 commercial or something. All right, nicely done. I'm surprised you knew Mr. Rad, like, just based on, like, you could put him into a genre.
I think you got served. I think I may have seen that in theaters.
I'm pretty sure I saw it in theaters with you. So,
okay.
Yeah. That was circa 2004 or something. But anyway.
I just like the end where he's like, they're like, well, wait, what about Emerald? And Mr. Rad's just like, don't worry about that, kids. Like, I took care of, like, they owed him like thousands of dollars worth of money.
Yeah.
And Mr. Rad's just like, don't worry about that. I got it handled. And I'm like, wait, did he kill Emerald? Like, nothing's explained.
Blood is dripping off of his hands.
Like, he just drives away in, like, Emerald's arms hanging outside of the tire or something. There's Emerald.
All right, so let's go back and forth.
On that line.
What's that?
I don't even think that was his name, Emerald, but, like, it was something jewel-related.
Okay, all right. Let's go back and forth and tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet this week. Tyler, let's start with you.
Yeah, I write at thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com. We recently ended the comic book era.
Mm.
Or discussing the comic book era. I think Traherne's still coming out with comics, but he's just not going to be talking about comics anymore.
Okay. All right.
Like other people's comics.
Right.
It's all about Traherne now.
Fair enough.
So check that out. It's pretty funny, I guess. Maybe.
And Tyler also runs the Not Just New Movies Twitter account, so you guys can contact him directly there if you want to engage in witty banter about terrible puns of movies that are coming out.
It's a pretty nice community. I mean, we talk to a lot of actresses who don't talk back. I also kind of connect with Jason Voorhees, of course. And we're starting to start the diplomatic proceedings with Michael Chiklis.
Okay, yeah. So
we'll be starting that next week.
We're doing God's work on Twitter, people. That's what's happening. So
we do not have a Kickstarter, so we will not bother you with like Kickstarter updates like a lot of people do. I do not bother you with links to anything because I never do anything. So it's basically me just talking. So we're not an advertising agency. So why don't you just follow us and we'll be a little nice little nice addition to your little news feed or whatever
Twitch
that thing.
Stream. Yeah, totally.
Twitch stream.
All right, I like it. Well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears, BenPears. You can read my writing at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake of this podcast. And you can hear me... I should really take this part out.
Quarterly.
I should take this part out of the little wrap-up where you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. It's technically true if you go into previous episodes, but we haven't recorded one in like over a month. So,
you should bring one of those guys on as our co-host.
I was really trying to do that recently, and Venkman was unavailable at one point. So we definitely need to. What am I thinking of? Oh, Kazam and Steel. I know that we at one point wanted to do a double feature of the Shaquille O'Neal movies.
That sounds awesome.
I know, and Free Reyes, aka Mazer at Geek Tyrant, wants to be the guest on that episode, and this was like one of the first ones we ever thought of during, you know, when this podcast originated. And I've been waiting forever and for both of those movies to become available on Netflix, and now Kazam is available on DVD, but Steel still is not. So we got to do something. We got to wait it out until both of those are available, and then we will do that double feature episode. That'll be a lot of fun. So. Speaking of a lot of fun, as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching The Producers and talking about that next week. So you guys can feel free to watch along. Spread the word about us. You know, if you guys like the podcast, tell your friends. Oh, we should give a big shout out to longtime listener Leo, who's left us a bunch of voicemails and stuff. He created this amazing list on IMDb that tracks all of the movies that we've discussed on the podcast before. So thank you very much, Leo. That's really awesome. People can find that on our Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/notjustnewmovies now and find our Facebook account and Tyler linked to it there. So you guys can track that down and add that to your lists of IMDb. If people even do that, I don't even know really. I was unaware that such a list could exist. But
it looks really sweet, so I don't care.
It does. Really cool stuff. So thanks again, Leo, and thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week.
You just got nicked.